Welcome to the Tom Nelson Podcast. Today I have Jasper Machogu here. And Jasper, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am from Kenya, Africa. Kenya is a small country of 55 million people. People are very poor. 80% of our population depend on agriculture for livelihood. I'm really excited to do this. Thank you, Tom, for hosting me.
Thank you. I'm glad to have you on this podcast. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your origin story as a skeptic?
I used to be a Greenpeace and Let's Do It Kenya member. I was a member of those two groups. They are environmental conservational groups. And I felt I was doing so much for the planet. Like I had so much anger. Like I felt we didn't deserve to be on this planet. And how we were littering, we were throwing plastics all around in the oceans. I felt so bad and I knew about fossil fuels emissions. Yeah, it was around this time that I came to the realization that in most situations, when we went around the poor areas, that's where you'd find most litter. Most of the plastic litter was from food, holding food, holding water, just basic needs. And if you went to the rich hoods, you wouldn't find the plastic littered around. Like, it's obvious. If you go to Japan or the US, you're going to find less litter compared to, let's say, poor Nairobi or another poor country or somewhere in Uganda. You can't compare the two. I sat down after a week of cleaning up the town. I thought about it. I came to the realization that, okay, towns were littered because the poor had to find a way to survive. They had to find a way to wake up tomorrow. They had to find cheap means of survival. And most of the cheap products, they were contained by plastics. And then I sat down, I started looking into Greenpeace. I planned to research on my own. I sat down, went into the Greenpeace website. I dug in deep and I found that Greenpeace was founded by a guy called Patrick Moore, like a co-founder, Patrick Moore. He had a book by then out, Fake Invisible Catastrophes and Prophets of Doom. I read it. I followed his Twitter. I'm a very active Twitter person. I really loved the book. On one of his posts, somebody told me, oh, you should check out Alex Epstein. And I went into checking out Alex Epstein and I really loved his work. Yeah, I loved his fossil future. And that's how I became a climate skeptic. The two have really inspired me. They have changed me a lot. And I've came to realize that it's a climate scam.
Excellent. And you are a friend of Alex Epstein, right? You've been on a podcast with him at least one?
Yeah, I was in a podcast with Alex Epstein.
And then just to get the timing down, this was during COVID that you read Patrick Moore's book, is that right?
Yes, 2020.
All right. And since then, it seems like by reading your Twitter feed, it looks like you really dove in and you've become a very well-informed skeptic. You must spend quite a bit of time reading up on it.
Yeah, because, okay, you have to do research about these things. Yeah. You have to do research each and every time. Like I rely on myself for research, knowledge.
Okay, very good. Your pinned tweet says this, pushing hard on the developing world to enact policies that hurt its people isn't cool. Our top problems are poverty, hunger, and corruption, not climate change, not EVs. We definitely need lots of cheap, reliable, plentiful energy. I think that's a great pinned tweet.
Welcome to my presentation. It's going to be in titled Energy and Agriculture Africa. And these are going to be notes for African policymakers, leaders, or corrupt leaders, activists in Africa and in the rest of the world. And it's going to be in regards to climate, energy, and agriculture. Welcome. Today, Africa is a home to 1.4 billion people, and that's a sixth of the world population. Africa's got 60% of arable land, and agriculture constitutes of a fifth of the continent's GDP, gross domestic product. And of course, Africa suffers from energy poverty and poverty, extreme poverty, hunger, among other problems. But The biggest problem Africa faces today is energy poverty. Today, an average African uses the amount of energy France and Germany consumed in 1860 and less electricity compared to an American refrigerator. An American refrigerator uses about 500 kilowatt hours per year, compared to an African who uses an average of 160 to 200 kilowatt hours. I come from a family of six people, and we consume approximately 120 kilowatt hours a year, and that's pretty low. That's the energy poverty that I'm talking about. Like, you can't compare the amount of energy an American refrigerator uses. We are responsible for 3% of the world's global greenhouse gas emissions. Africa makes up almost a fifth of global population, yet it consumes less than 4% of global electricity. The energy poverty. Of course, population is a weapon. I don't know why people refer to it as overpopulation. There is nothing like overpopulation, because all along people have been saying the world was going to be overpopulated, but I don't see it. Unlike in Japan, whose population is made up of people of age 65 and above with a median age of 48 years, Europe at 42, US and China at 38, India 28, Africa's population is quite young at 20 years. By 2050, Africa is predicted to have 2.4 billion people. If you look at the population densities in Africa, Africa has got 45 people per square kilometer, and that can't be compared to China's 153 or India's 464. And even in coming years, when Africa's population is going to maybe double, we're going to have 90 people per square kilometer, which is still low. Besides, we make up of most of the world's arable land. So we're going to, of course, support it. This is the world at night. If you look at Europe, you can see lighting in Europe and the rest of the world. And you can see a few lights in Africa, in South Africa and parts of Nigeria and Libya, but and Egypt. But most of Africa is just darkness. And that's the energy poverty that I'm talking about. This picture was taken by NASA. In Africa, you can see the amount of energy an African uses compared to, let's say, the US, an average of 80,000 kilowatt hours versus 40,000 kilowatt hours in Europe, and Africa below 5,000 kilowatt hours in general. In just 2.3 days, the average American or Australian emits as much as the average Mali, a person from Mali, or Nigerian in a year from Niger. An average African consumes in a year the same amount of energy an American does in 19 days. A week of primary energy use for an American equals 1 year of Nigerian energy consumption, 1 week or 7 days. For an American, the 7 day energy consumption equals to 2 years for a person in Uganda. I got this from Energy for Growth Hub. They have really nice pictures. Let's look at Chad. Chad has got a population of 16 million people. Compared to Golden in Colorado, USA, it has a population of 20,000 people. You can see the amount of the electricity consumption is equivalent, almost the same. That's 900 times the population. It's unimaginable. If you look at Rwanda, 1 terawatt hours for Rwanda and Boulder, Colorado, 104 million people compared to 12 million people. Look at Nigeria. Nigeria has got a population of 203 million people compared to San Antonio, Texas, 1.5 million people. It's unimaginable. Then another problem we have to contributing to the energy poverty is clean cooking. Like, we use firewood to cook our food compared to the people in US who use LPG, LNG, and in Kenya, for instance, where I'm from, 70% of all energy consumption in Kenya comes from burning firewood and biomass. So the WHO estimates the death toll from dirty cooking globally to be at 3.8 million annually. Traditional Energy sources expose those in households, often women and children, to pollution levels that are far higher than in even the most polluted cities in the world. 3 billion people are in energy poverty today. Unfortunately, in Africa, 600 million people, or 50% of the population today, do not have access to electricity, projected to rise to 900 million by 2050, according to IEA. 900 million people today have no access to clean cooking. China has focused on replacing the coal cooking stoves that many relied on until recently and has achieved dramatic reduction in household air pollution. India achieved progress by expanding access to cleaner fuels or LPG, liquid petroleum gas. And you can see China, India, Uganda, Nigeria. Indoor air pollution, 100K. In Uganda, it's about 130. Nigeria, it's lesser. And India. But China, it has gone down dramatically from 1990 to 2019 because China has been using plenty of fossil fuels from 1990 onwards. So today, Africa has got more than 5,000 billion cubic meters of natural gas resources discovered, but they have not been approved for development. These resources could provide an additional 90 billion cubic meters of gas a year by 2030, and they will be, of course, vital for fertilizer, steel and cement industries, and of course, water desalinization. This is from IEA, and it is Africa Energy Outlook. It was titled Energy Africa Energy Outlook, and it's very recent because it's for 2022. Cumulative CO2 emissions from the use of these gas resources over the next 30 years will be around 10 gigatons. Adding emissions to Africa's cumulative total today will bring its share of global emissions to a mere 3.5%, minus South Africa 1%. Let me dig into a little bit of climate change. If you look at these graphs, this is a graph that Patrick Moore loves, and I love it too because it shows that when carbon dioxide levels were very high compared to today, you can see the average current period, that's when life thrived. The Cambrian explosion happened when carbon levels in parts per million were at almost 6,000. The Triassic and Jurassic period during the Dinosaur, carbon in parts per million in the atmosphere at about 1500 to 1800. Then coral reefs live for 5,000 years. Surely they will adapt. Plus coral life began about 500 million years ago when the carbon levels were at 4,000 parts per million. Plus this year, I think it was in Australia, scientists revealed the Great Barrier Reef shows the highest coral cover seen since records began in 1985, but that's not what people hear. Then let's look at the climate models, because most of the stuff that we know today and stuff that we hear from the social media, the radio, the TV, it's usually from climate modeling, future projections or predictions. What we have observed over recent years is very different from what the climate models say. 102 climate projections, but hey, look at them. They got it wrong completely. And okay, this must have been from John Christie. He's an expert in climate modeling. Also look at this. This is the average of 102 IPCC climate model projections. Now this is the average. You can't compare to what happened really, the reality now. Look at the observed and the projections. It's completely different. There is a time I was having this discussion with Andrew Dessler. I told him we can't predict tomorrow's weather accurately, even less accurately next week. Imagine predicting the general weather trend or pattern for a period of 30 years straight now with the climate. It's unimaginable. And Andrew said, actually, we have demonstrated that we can do that. We had the discussion in June this year, and he shared a post from April 2016 in which there is a guy called Wally Broca. He was a climate modeler. He predicted the global temperatures for the next 35 years from 1975. But then what Andrew Dessler didn't realize is Wally Broca wrote in 2017 about his supposedly accurate predictions. He said, "Because of this, I became convinced that my analysis was faulty and that my prediction, although correct, was the product of damn luck." Look at the title. It's titled, "When Climate Change Predictions Are Right for the Wrong Reasons." It says it all. We shouldn't make any decisions based on climate modeling. Let's look at the carbon dioxide effects, which are a richer, fed, healthier, larger population. Number one, we're going to look at greening or fertilization effect. The image that you're seeing is from NASA. And okay, in 2016, there was a team of scientists and they noted there was a 14% increase of global leaf area and 70% was thanks to the carbon dioxide that we have been emitting. Of course, that's a positive effect. And of course, plants won't grow under very low CO2 levels, 150 to 180. In between there, we won't have any plants growing. And you can see from this picture, at 835 parts per million, the pine was bigger, it was taller, it was, you can see for yourself, compared to 385 parts per million. So CO2 is less. Number two, let's look at climate-related deaths. In the past 120 years, the climate-related deaths have been going down, even lower in the 1800s during the Great Famine in Asia. Some reports say 40 million people died from the famine, the drought. And even in between 1927, 1930, there was also a drought and very many people died. And despite the fact that people say we're experiencing droughts and people are dying, look at the statistics. What do they say? They don't say that. They don't show that. Let's have a look at the life expectancy between 1770 to 2021. It's obvious we are doing amazing. Even Africa is doing great. Then we have global weather losses as global GDP percentage in between 1990 to 2022. It's going down despite the fact that people are building around the coastal regions. Like everybody in the developing world wants a house near the beach. Then if you look at the global weather and climate disasters in between 2000 and 2022, it has been going down. Let's look at number four, a fed population. There has, like today, people are fed than they were back in 1900s, in 1800s. Like, we are fed even better than the Israelites being rained on by manna from heavens. Okay, something to note is if you go to the developed countries, to the US and UK, for instance, for UK, 65% of the population are overweight today, and about 35%, 32 to 35% are obese. Obesity comes from too much food or eating too much, generally. What I'm saying is people are more fed. In the US, more than 70% of the population are overweight. Yeah, that's a positive CO2 effect. The global life expectancy increased from an average of 29 in 1800 to 73 years in 2019. That's, and I can attest to that because I've grown up in a community whereby two generations ago, families, parents were having 10 to 12 kids because they knew very well that some of the kids wouldn't survive to adulthood. Unlike today, whereby we have parents having 2 to 3 kids, up to 4. For a generation, because a parent knows for sure that all of the kids are going to reach adulthood. Then number five, that's it, poverty, extreme poverty. 100 years ago, three in every four people of the world's population lived in extreme poverty. Today, less than 1 out of 10 does. And that's evident from the graph, even in sub-Saharan Africa, where that 6% of the population are in extreme, are very poor. It is going down. GDP per capita, that shows how rich we are today. Even for sub-Saharan Africa, going up. In the US, it has been going up and it doesn't seem to go down anytime soon. Let's have a look at GDP per capita. That shows how rich we are. In Africa, even in sub-Saharan Africa, it's going up. People are becoming rich than they were 200 years ago. In China, in between 1990 upwards, it's going up quite fast. And that's because of the amount of energy that we are consuming. Number five, heat versus cold death. In the US, about 20,000 people die from heat every year, but 170,000 die from cold. And worldwide, cold kills 9 times more people compared to heat. That's from the Lancet. If you look at Africa, because people think because Africa is around the tropics, around the equator, more people are prone to dying from heat than from cold. It's not the case. That's not what the data says. If you look at it, heat and cold death made up of 1.2 million people died from extreme heat and cold. 1.18 died from extreme cold. Only 25,000 died from extreme heat. So let's look at extreme weather events. The percentage of droughts in the globe has not changed. For floods, there is no good data. That doesn't mean that it has increased, not even for Pakistan. For wildfires, they have gone down. For tropical cyclones and hurricanes, they have also gone down. Generally, this is from a journal, an article posted in ResearchGate. The analysis is then extended to some global response indicators of extreme meteorological events, namely natural disasters, flood, droughts, ecosystem productivity, and yields of the four main crops, that is maize, rice, soybean, and wheat. None of these response indicators show a clear positive trend of extreme events. In conclusion, on the basis of observational data, not climate models, the climate crisis that, according to many sources, we are experiencing today is not evident yet. And okay, the alarmists say that solar and wind are going to save us from climate change and, of course, electric vehicles. What they don't know is, or what they ignore is, wind and solar are just intermittent, dilute, parasitic sources of energy or electricity. And electric vehicles are just for the rich. Let's start with renewables. Despite the hype, politicized renewables make up less than 3% of global energy consumption, actually 2%. China manufactures around 70% of all solar, and of course they do it with slave labor. 90% of all solar are manufactured in Asia. This is just a picture of the global primary energy consumption. And for 2019, fossil fuels made up 84% of global energy. Cobalt used in electric vehicle manufacturing comes from Congo. Look at these pictures. So these are just kids under mostly 12 years and 18 years and below is a child. Children provide 40% of the labor to mine cobalt in Congo. There is a guy I really like his content. He's mostly active on Twitter and he's got a Substack, Mining Atoms, Randall. So Randall wrote in one of his articles, rich nations who could produce the energy resources they directly and indirectly consume, that's nuclear, natural gas, and oil, but refuse to do so because they are too virtuous. So they import it. They outcompete the 50 bankrupt nations. Poor people. For now, done while we save you from the terrible things decades from now. And of course, we have seen that in recent years. Europe, during this energy crisis, has been competing with Pakistan and most African countries for coal, for natural gas and oil. And of course, we can't compete. Humanity is getting more prosperous every year. The UN estimates that without global warming, the average person in 2100 will be 450% richer. And global warming means we will be 434% richer instead. And that's not a disaster, thanks to Bjorn Lomborg. Let's look at EVs. By the way, only 15% of the rich America can afford an electric vehicle. Only 15%. And of course, most Americans, like the subsidies for electric vehicles come from the rest of the population. So they like the government, they're subsidizing vehicles for the rich. The IEA estimates that if every nation achieves their ambitious targets on increasing electric car ownership, it will reduce CO2 emissions in this decade by 235 million tons. That, according to the UN Climate Panel's standard model, will reduce global temperatures by about 1/10,000th of a degree Celsius by the end of the century. Given the low concentration of many elements in their ores, it's necessary to extract and process about 225 tons of raw materials to build a typical electric vehicle. By the way, only 15% of lithium-ion batteries are being recycled in the US, and that's a rich country. You can imagine where the rest goes to. Electric vehicles are quite expensive, and battery replacement is pricey. Electric vehicles cost about $60,000 USD today, and replacement goes up to $3,400 USD. So 50% of EVs sold this year will be in China. And the funny thing is, 87% of energy in China, it comes from fossil fuels. So imagine buying an electric vehicle and charging it with electricity coming from burning lignite or dirty coal. The problem with batteries, look at Tesla, is the energy density, and that's energy stored per kilogram. For a Tesla battery, it's at 300 compared to diesel, a kg of diesel at 12,700 watt hours, and gasoline at 13,000, and that's going to be a problem ever. A few days ago, the government of Switzerland said that it wanted its citizens to limit the charging of electric cars, the use of electric cars, because of the winter that is coming and they're in an energy crisis. And of course, the government was met with the activists saying, no, we have to use electric vehicles because they are clean. In California, Newsom, the governor who bet Michael Schellenberger, says this was published in 2020, September. The California announced that it was going to phase out gasoline-powered cars, and that would reduce demand for fossil fuel and, in turn, fighting against climate change. This is from the government of California. But then, in 2022, amid heat wave, California asked vehicle owners to limit charging. The irony. Let's look at batteries. We'll have batteries store electricity when the sun is shining and when the wind is blowing. And when it's not, we'll have batteries supplying the energy, the electricity. But then the problem is most of the batteries today, 90% of the global electricity storage comes from pumped hydro storage. So let's have a look at pumped hydro's potential in Europe. I was having this argument with some fellas on Twitter, and they said I should check out pumped hydro's potential in Europe, like pumped hydro storage. And because Europe has got more potential in terms of pumped hydro, and of course there is a study on it, and it says 29 terawatt hours of electricity could be realized in Europe. But then when you look at the amount of electricity Europe consumed in 2021, it was 2771 terawatt hours. That's just 2% of what Europe consumes per year. Embracing net zero policies centered around climate models that don't work. Let's look at the irony. In Europe, so I'm going to show you what net zero policies have done to Europe. As much as 70% of European heating comes from natural gas and electricity. And with Russian deliveries reducing, wood has become sought after commodity. Prices for wood pellets have nearly doubled to 600 euros a ton in France. And there are signs of panic buying. Hungary even went so far as to ban exports for pellets, and Romania capped firewood prices for 6 months. Meanwhile, wood stoves can now take months to deliver. That's from Bloomberg. Europeans are hoarding wood and inquiring about house manure to burn this winter amid sky energy prices, fortune. The group said the rise in energy costs, which have spiked by 147% on average since the beginning of the year, is preventing retailers from making a profit. The share of electricity costs in South volumes for retailers has already reached almost 3% on average, and many in the industry expect this figure to rise to as high as 5% in 2023. The big highlight, 16K companies are shutting down. Average Germany household gas bill 173% higher than a year ago. If energy prices stay so elevated that part of European industry becomes structurally uncompetitive, factories will shut down and move to the US and China, where there is an abundance of cheap shale. That's an Oxford economist. French gas manufacturer Duralex has altered production due to soaring energy costs. The company said its energy bill had gone from 3 million euros last year to 12 million euros this year, or 46% of their turnover. Since 2021, the price of electricity has been multiplied by 22 and that of gas by 18. And therefore, Duralex believes that stopping production is the only solution to preserve the future of the company. And that's from Duralex itself. When we look back at the current energy crisis in 10 years or so, we might consider this time as the starting point for an accelerated deindustrialization in Germany. It goes on and on. Polish homeowners are turning to trash to heat their homes. People are scared that they are scared and they are collecting anything that can be used for burning. That means that returning to everything from high polluting brown coal to wood, peats, oats, and even garbage. That's happening. In 2019, the UK as a whole, households, companies, and government spent 40 billion on energy. It went up by 4 times to 190 billion euros. The demand for burners has increased the price of wood. Electricity and gas prices increased by 54 and 99% respectively in the last 1 year to September. That's in the UK. Still production halting due to rising energy costs, UK. It goes on and on. Is energy cost inflation, since fertilizer production is an energy intensive process. Europe's energy crisis is leaving the continent's industry at a standstill, and its biggest car manufacturer says competitors are racing ahead as EU government fails to provide enough support. That's Volkswagen. So the EU Commission opposed some fertilizer plants that were supposed to be set up in Africa because they were inconsistent with the EU energy and environmental policies. They would clash with the net zero policies. That was really, Look at them. Wind farm in Germany is being dismantled to expand coal mine. That's happening. If you look at the household electricity prices, it is like Germany has got the most expensive electricity prices in the EU, with Denmark and I think Switzerland was up there. But from the year 2000, Germany has got high electricity prices, despite the fact that Germany is a leader of green energy or renewable energy. They have spent about 500 billion euros to bring up Energiewende. But even when you look at their coal consumption, it hasn't gone down any much. This is the cost of electricity in Germany, comparing it to France, a leader in nuclear, and Sweden, a leader in hydro. Now let's put it with California and the rest of the US. California has got 15% solar and wind. The rest of the US has got 9.7% solar and wind. Germany has got 33.6%. And to date has got, I think, 40% solar and wind. And it has got expensive electricity prices, of course. There is a table I was arguing with some guys on Twitter. Twitter has been a really great platform for me to learn. And we were talking, I think it was early this year, maybe March to May. We were like, the high electricity prices in Australia, it that topic was trending, and we got to have a conversation, and I got to reading a report by the Analysis and Policy Observatory. They did a report. They are a government body that does research on mostly clean energy and other policies. So from the 2021 report, it says, good news for consumers and businesses. The falling price trends for recent years are expected to continue into 2022. According to the Australian Energy Market Commission, annual electricity bills are forecast to fall by 5.7 between 2021 and 2024, representing a saving of $77 for Australian households. This will primarily be due to further declines in wholesale electricity prices as more renewable energy generation comes online. But the reality is different from what the prediction said. If you look at this, these are states in Australia. Electricity prices have gone up by 3 times in each state of Australia. In the same report, you'll find $603 go to poles and wires, and the rest goes to generating costs and environmental costs. So 44% goes directly into poles and wires set to bring on renewable energy that's supposed to be built in Australia. 10,000 kilometers are needed to connect consumers with diverse generation sources, it says in there. And of course, that proves that energy prices have gone up in Australia because of renewable energy that's coming online. This is also really fascinating. The benefits of world hunger. This was written by UNICO, a magazine by the United Nations. And trade. She did a tweet on July this year about the article. And the UN Chronicle said, the article appeared in the UN Chronicle 14 years ago as an attempt at satire and was never meant to be taken literally. We have been made aware of its failures, even as satire, and have removed it from us. Let's look at what it said. For those of us at the high end of the social ladder, ending hunger globally will be a disaster. If there were no hunger in the world, who will plow the fields? Who would harvest our vegetables? Who would work in the rendering plants? Who would clean our toilets? We would have to produce our own food and clean our own toilets. No wonder people at the high end are not rushing to solve the hunger problem. For many of us, hunger is not a problem, but an asset. Let's have a look at South Africa and its coal emissions, because South Africa is responsible for 1% of global GHG emissions. And it says, okay, Eskom is a government body for South Africa that generates and transmits electricity. 72% of South Africa's primary energy are provided by coal. And Africa's coal reserves are estimated at 53 billion tons. And with our present production rate, there should be almost 200 years of coal supply. The people were telling Africa, that South Africa, that they should stop using coal. Joe Biden did it recently, and he was giving South Africa $2 billion so that South Africa closes down its coal plant. I don't see that happening, because also recently, South Africa's energy minister said, we are going to continue burning coal because hunger kills faster. And that's interesting, because that's what African leaders should be doing. In 2006, about 80% of South Africa's coal exports was in Europe. So in recent years, what has been happening is rich nations have been telling South Africa to stop using coal, because obviously South Africa's coal consumption means they don't get enough of it. Coal sales from South Africa to Europe rose 8-fold during the first 6 months of 2022 compared with last year, as demand for the fossil fuel surged ahead of ban on Russian coal, according to a source. That's funny. Huh. So they want Africa to stop using fossil fuels so that they can take the fossil fuels and consume them. Coal demand is set to grow by 1.2, reaching an all-time high and surpassing 8 billion tons for the first time. This is by the IEA 2022. This executive summary just came out. And of course, despite the fact that people are saying, oh, coal is dirty, we can't stop burning coal. Africa is not a culprit. Let's look at China. I really love China, because despite the fact that the BRICS nations have been singing about net zero policies, the WEF, the UN, Greenpeace, Sierra, etc. None of them has got the guts to go to China and tell China to stop using fossil fuels. And of course, China is opening up more coal power plants than the rest of the world combined. And it has got more coming up in a few days, in a few years. China helped to reduce the number of people living in extreme poverty by 94% between 1980 and 2015. It did miracles. So 70% of solar manufacturing materials are processed in China. And actually 90% of solar manufacturing materials, they're processed in Asia. And of course, China, as I said earlier, produces its energy by consuming fossil fuels, 87% of fossil fuels. And if you look at this, coal consumption in China is now going down. And actually, if you look at these other nations, the US, Germany, if you look at the US and the UK, most of these nations, actually most of these rich nations have transferred their manufacturing to China. China is doing their dirty work. Like China is producing cars, clothing, food, exporting it to the rich nations. Like they have the money, they can buy the products from China. And China has got to find a way to produce, manufacture the goods cheaply. And of course, it's going to use coal. So China accounts for 53% of coal use globally. Let's look at the global cumulative CO2 emissions, because people say China is emitting a lot. China is not emitting that much compared to the US. But then, even when you look at the global cumulative CO2 emissions, China is still down there. Africa doesn't even appear on the map because it's so tiny that you will barely see what's happening. At the end of the day, we will choose what's right. And of course, that means choosing humanity, choosing human flourishing. The UK is condemned by its own climate advisors for greenlighting fast new coal mine in 3 decades. So Rishi Sunak recently launched this coal mine, and it has raised questions in the UK. In other news, coal makes a comeback as Europe tries to avoid an energy emergency. Germany fires up extra coal power capacity to plug winter supplies. A wind farm in Germany is being dismantled to expand coal mine. Then Parliament votes to give green labels to nuclear and gas. Natural gas is now labeled as sustainable. And of course, it contradicts the EU's pleas to the rest of the world to rapidly decarbonize their economies, according to CNN. Let's look at fossil fuels. I love fossil fuels, just like Alex Epstein. And I think, I know for sure that fossil fuels are going to save Africans. They are going to save our nation. I don't know why our politicians buy into the net zero and fossil fuels ban, just like the rich European and the US advise them. Of course, they are bribed to do that in most cases. So most people don't know that, as I said earlier, in 2020, fossil fuels made up 79% of global energy use. And you can see solar and wind make up of about 2% of global energy use. A barrel of oil can give a couple of products, and you can see them here, clothing, plastics, energy. We have 3 basic needs. Those are the ones that I was taught in primary school. We have food, shelter, and clothing. But I think we should have energy as a basic need. Without energy, we can't produce food or shelter or clothing. So let's look at the 4 pillars of modern civilization. We have ammonia, steel, cement, and plastics. And of course, without plastics, we don't have a modern civilization. Without cement, we don't have buildings. We don't have roads. Without fossil fuels, we don't have steel, because steel is just iron ore plus carbon. 4 billion people, half of the population today. Without natural gas, we won't have ammonia, we won't have we won't have fertilizers. Petrochemical products include plastics, soaps, detergents, solvents, medicines, cosmetics, electronics, solar panels, wind turbines, fertilizer, pesticides, explosives, fibers, rubbers, paint, flooring, insulating materials. And then PVC is now the primary component in more than a quarter of all health components. And by the way, look at the hospital. A syringe is made up of plastics. The pipes that give, that support life, plastic. The gloves, plastic, or fossil fuels. The list goes on and on. So agriculture, let's talk about agriculture remedies in Africa. Agriculture has got 11 times more potential compared to other solutions or policies that would aid Africa beat poverty and hunger. So agriculture is really crucial in ensuring that Africa flourishes, Africa develops, Africa becomes a great continent for its people. So in Africa, 70% earn a livelihood from agriculture. Number one, let's look at value addition. 2% profits are realized from selling cocoa by the farmer. The rest goes to the importers, where more than half of its population live below global poverty. In 2014, Africa exported coffee valued at $6 billion. But after the coffee was roasted, blended, packaged, and branded, the final product sold yielded $100 billion. So you can see the importance of value addition. So number two, irrigation. Less than 4% of arable land in Africa is under irrigation. Spain and Israel are in arid regions, but it produces plenty. In Almeria, Spain, 100,000 hectares of land are under greenhouse farming. And in most cases, one in every two capsicum or cucumber that you find in European markets are from Spain. In Israel is a net exporter of vegetables, despite the fact that it's situated in a desert. Let's go to mechanization. Low mechanization compared to developing China and India. In Africa, Africa has less than 3% of farm mechanization, compared to 75% in China and 45% in India. And of course, all of those irrigation, they require fossil fuels for the piping. For the greenhouses, they need the plastic, the polypapers for the covers. Then we have the pump, the irrigation pumps. The irrigation pumps, they use fossil fuels in most cases. Mechanization, there's nothing like electrification in farm mechanization. It's always fossil fuels. Then number four, we have fertilizer application. Of course, fertilizer application. Fertilizer is made from fossil fuels, natural gas. And Africa uses about 15 to 20 kgs per hectare compared to 360 in China and 120 in the US, 150 in Europe. So we don't apply enough. And that's a problem because despite the fact that people say we need to find ways, maybe try organic farming. Organic farming would work. Look at the countries back in the day. If you go to 1800s, we had to apply maybe between 10 to 30 tons of manure. Modern farming has really transformed agriculture. Today, you just need 100 kgs, kilograms of fertilizer, and you have more than enough nitrogen for the crops. And Africa needs that. If you go to a country like Angola, 15 kilograms of fertilizer a year, that's very low. Africa, despite the fact that Africa, a sixth of the world population, Africa consumes less than 5% of global fertilizers. The UK was also struggling with persistently low crop yields for most of its agricultural history. It produced 2 tons per hectare, just like in Africa. In Africa today, for corn, we produce about 2 to 3 tons per hectare, compared to 11 tons in the US, 7 to 8 tons for the UK. This is the percentage of land agriculturally in Africa. It's quite low compared to other regions, especially India. India with the many people. The climate alarm is applauded Sri Lanka because of the shift to organic farming. But what happened is after the ban, the fertilizer ban and herbicide ban, there were drops in yield, 35% for rice, 50% for tea, 50% for corn, 30% for coconut, 40% for rubber. And what happened is government couldn't pay back loans to suppliers to buy essentials. 500,000 people sank back to poverty. And the government had to import rice to feed its people. And you know what happened after that? It ran bankrupt and the government was dissolved. Number five, proper post-harvest processes. This is a global problem. I'm a strong advocate for post-harvest processes because I'm an expert, a professional in that area. We lose a third of all food produced. Then 6% of global greenhouse gas emissions comes from food losses and waste. Even in the UK, 70% of food wasted was found to be good for eating. We haven't looked into post-harvest processing. And if we did, we'd really make progress. If you look at this, the direct energy use in food production is now on the order of 1% of the total national supply. But after adding various post-harvest processes, it goes to 20%. 1% of the US's energy consumption goes to producing food and 20% goes into marketing, transportation, refrigeration, parking. Then number six for Africa, agriculture remedies. Number six is GMO. And recently, Kenya legalized GMO, genetically modified organisms. And I just wanted to share this because I think GMO is going to work miracles for our agriculture. Look at this. There's nothing growing for non-GMO, but for GMO, you can see a very big difference. Same here. We have for maize. We have for potatoes, Irish potatoes also. The expected outcomes include increased yields. Of course, fertilizer, irrigation, all of those are going to increase yields. They're going to enrich our population. We're going to have more industries, thus less unemployment cases. We're going to have specialization. We're going to have more food for exports and, of course, earning more. It's going to cap deforestation, less water usage, urbanization as fertilizers and machines liberate people from farming. It's going to reduce time required to produce food and less people are going to depend on agriculture for livelihood. All of those are going to develop Africa. Africa is going to be a great nation. The rest of the world needs Africa for sure. Africa is home to some 30% of the world's mineral reserves, 8% of the world's natural gas, and 12% of the world's oil reserves. The continent has 40% of the world's gold and up to 90% of its chromium and platinum. Chromium is used in painting and in teeth replacement and stuff like that. Platinum is more expensive than gold, by the way. The largest reserves of cobalt, diamonds, platinum, and uranium in the world are in Africa. It holds 65% of the world's arable land and 10% of the planet's internal renewable freshwater sources. That's from UNEP. The DRC produces more than 70% of the world's cobalt. Zambia is the world's sixth largest copper producer, second largest cobalt producer in Africa. And of course, as I said earlier, a younger population means we're going to do great things. Remember, these are the people that are advocating for net zero policies and advocating for climate change. They're fighting for climate change. Barack Obama, he bought that house near the beach, despite the fact that he's been saying we're going to have sea level rise. Nancy Pelosi, Bill Gates, Al Gore, they all bought beach houses. Welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life has never been better. Written by the WEF. So the WEF, this is a post they did back in 2016. The WEF advises governments on various environmental, social, and governance. And they have some sort of scale whereby they give them the ESG score. And a country like Sri Lanka got an ESG score of 98, I think, or 99. And that's the irony, because if you look at it, various governments have been advocating for net zero policies by 2030, everything by 2030. So the advisor is saying by 2030, we're going to own nothing, have no privacy, and life will never be better. It's a lie. Owning nothing is terrible. Until you find yourself in a situation whereby you can't feed yourself, you will never understand this. Now, this is us in 2030, supposedly. We're going to sit down and we're going to ask ourselves, now that we have achieved net zero, what do we do? Now that we don't own anything, what do we do? And it's going to be a bad time in civilization. And that's the end. Thank you, Tom, for the opportunity. At least I get to share my ideas and opinions with your audience, a bigger audience. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. I'll have Tom include my Twitter handle. Feel free to DM me. You're doing so much. I have my YouTube notifications on for your channel because I find the kind of people that you give opportunity to, they are really educative. I know I'm going to learn a lot from the podcast. Thank you very much.